Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. Five, four, three, two, and one. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Edwards. Alongside me today, folks, we have Kristen Hull, the founder of Nia Impact Capital. Kristen, thanks for coming on the program today.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me today. Excited to be here.
Fantastic. Well, Kristen, I always like to start out with a good story. Of course, wanted you to think back to maybe an earlier memory of Nia Impact Capital, which might answer the question of why the company exists in general. Is there a story in mind that when I ask you that question that resonates with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are here to invest with purpose. Nia is actually a Swahili word, which means intention and purpose. And we are bringing impact investing into public markets. So really bringing a level of consciousness of choosing companies that will help us get to the next economy that is just and inclusive. So helping our clients earn financial returns while also having a positive impact.
And what is the norm right now? You talked a lot about disruption before our interview. What is the norm that you're trying to disrupt, perhaps?
Right now, most of us do our investing in a very status quo style with an over diversification, meaning that we have lots of funds, whether they're mutual funds or ETFs, and each one of them could have thousands of companies in them via an index. The S&P 500 has our 500 largest companies. The MSCI ACWI has several thousand global companies. The Russell 3000 has 3000 companies. And so by investing into each one of these, we are investing across the market, and yet no one is actually making decisions on the daily about which companies should or could be included. And so it's almost like our economy is on autopilot without careful management. And so we do get the economy we invest into, and our economy is a bit chaotic. It's also quite extractive. We have lots of fossil fuel companies in our retirement funds, where many of our younger clients in particular are not interested in investing in an incumbent economy. They really want to invest into an economy that works for them and for their peers. And so what we do at Nia is build concentrated portfolios of solutions-focused companies. All of them are working on one or more of our six solution themes. That's how they derive their revenue. That's how those companies are built, with purpose. And all of our companies do have diversity in leadership. And then we work with each one of our portfolio companies to increase their transparency, as well as their progress on their diversity, equity, inclusion journeys, and also on their sustainability. So we are asking each of our companies to report on their scope and carbon emissions, their scope 1, 2, and 3. We check in about their Paris alignment and their goals and their strategies. So basically, the status quo is kind of set it and forget it in a large number of companies. And we're helping people move to a more directed portfolio of companies that they can really own, that they can be really proud of, and that they can know what they're invested in and why.
I like that. So you're working with clients, and you have six different areas of solutions for something that might be of interest to me. Maybe give me an example of a client who is interested in healthcare, or maybe it's reducing greenhouse gas emissions. How can you work with them and make sure that you can deliver on what you're saying?
Well, we choose the very best of the best companies. We are already working with companies that are solutions focused, whose revenues, products, and services come from one or more of our six solution themes. So it's not like we are investing in a Chevron or a BP and saying, your entire business model needs to change. We need you to turn the ship around and diversify it on the way back and clean up all of this bills while you're at it. We're actually choosing the companies that have revenues that are coming from our next economy, coming from a sustainable and inclusive place, and then just helping them to be even better because there's no perfect company. Yours, mine, there's no perfect company out there. So investors can use their voice, both as a right and a responsibility to help improve these companies.
And tell me a little bit more about the clients you're working with. I mean, why are they so passionate about this area? Where are they coming from? How are they finding you?
So we have clients in our mutual fund that are finding us in their retirement accounts. And then we also have clients that are in our separately managed accounts that are find us probably through their financial advisor.
Okay. And so is there a kind of a persona that you could describe for me for these kind of investors, or are these your daily investors looking to have a nice retirement account and just want to make sure that their money isn't going into things that might not align with their values?
Yeah, I think it's investors that want to be really conscious about where their money is going. As I mentioned, we are fossil fuel free, so that we have been since inception, and all of our companies do include diversity and leadership. So it would be those clients that understand that those are principles that could increase return on investment. Diverse teams, in the research has shown that they make better decisions up to 87% of the time. Often boards that have women in leadership on the boards of directors, those companies do better across various different statistics. And so sometimes it's people that are looking to reduce risks in their portfolio. Sometimes it's more alignment with their values. But generally, those that are interested in leaving the status quo, possibly for more innovation, will find us and be interested in NIA. I guess I would also say that those that are interested in women and empowerment, we do talk with each of our companies about reproductive justice and reproductive care, particularly post the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court. We do know that most people in the U.S. do receive their health care through their employment. So we are talking to our companies being employers and, you know, making sure that they are providing the care that that women need to see.
That's incredible. Tell me more about, because you said a fossil fuel free company. And I just want to be very intentional about asking this question and making sure that it's truthful. When you say that, is this because there's like they're able to offset the carbon emissions, or do you say that they don't use carbon emissions whatsoever? No transportation, nothing in their products, no virgin plastics, no virgin oils. What do you mean by that? Fossil fuel free.
Fossil fuel free comes from revenues. So we're talking about producers, any company that's involved in extraction or transportation or refining of fossil fuels.
Okay.
That would extend to us to jet fuel as well. So no airlines, for example.
Got it. So if you do invest in a consumer packaged good company where that distributes, you know, your items to stores, that still would be considered fossil fuel free, even though transportation.
Right, because their revenue is not coming from a source of fossil fuels. Okay. If that were a case where we've had conversations where a distributor of natural and organic foods is using trucks, and then we'll talk to them about what does it mean to electrify their transportation. That's come up in the past. So working for these companies to be the very best that they can be.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. The heart of the question I'm getting toward, Kristen, is where is this going to you? Like, what do you see these large organizations? How do you see them shifting to get toward this based on the, of course, the investors who are asking for portfolios like yours?
Could you restate the question?
Yeah. Where are the companies that you're investing in going toward in terms of climate solutions so that they can reduce their risk for the investors, as you put it, the investors looking to invest into companies that have a reduced risk, thus are climate friendly?
Got it. Exactly. So our companies are forward thinking, and we are choosing companies that recognize that there is a climate crisis and that they can both, via their products and services, help to mitigate or prevent that. So that would be on the renewable energy side, whether it's wind or solar or eventually waves. So solar panel companies or looking at some of our largest wind turbines. So when we're transitioning to the next clean and just economy, that's going to involve renewable energy. So a lot of these companies do stand to grow and stand to grow their addressable market as we make that transition. Then, as you mentioned, some of our other companies, whether it's a product or service that they are, if they have packaging for it, recognizing that fossil fuels are diminishing in favor, are they looking for more sustainable packaging? Are they looking for more sustainable transportation? And what does that look like as they future-proof? So those companies that are measuring and reporting on their scope 1, 2, and 3 carbon emissions, those companies are often better positioned. They understand what their carbon is now, and they're often looking to reduce that, partner with others, do things in a different, more innovative way, so that when our climate does get more chaotic, they're going to be in a better position to execute.
And let me just ask you a few questions forward thinking now. I like you, you seem very knowledgeable in this space, and so I'd love to ask you the question. The legislation right now for offsetting carbon emissions, or disclosing rather your carbon emissions in the EU, has already taken place. In California, it's coming. In the broader United States, on a state-by-state basis, there's legislation going on right now to deny that, right? Do you think that there will come a point in time when this will be a regulation where public companies, not really the mom and pops, but the public companies will have to disclose their carbon emissions?
I do. I do. And the SEC is talking about that. And we're actually in conversation and writing letters to the SEC about how investors do need to know this. These are material issues that investors need to know. And so we do see the SEC moving forward with types of regulations where this type of transparency will be needed. So those companies that can get out in front are already going to be prepared.
Lean into that more when you say get out in front for the layman investor out there. Why is that important?
Because you never want to be invested in a company that's scrambling, that's behind the eight ball, right? You want to see, all of us want to see companies that are looking above the clouds or around the corner and that can be really acting where that puck is going to go, if we're using a hockey term, and not behind and not reactionary. We want to invest in companies that have leadership that really wants to be out in front, and can, we have a lot going on. We have geopolitical crisis, we have climate crisis, and we have lots of turmoil within the United States. And so having companies with leadership that want to position their companies such that they're going to be able to deal with any of the risks that are coming at them, because it could be a pipeline issue. It could be, are they able to get, we saw some of this disruption in the pandemic about being able to get raw ingredients or materials. So having really solid relationships and being really collaborative, as well as forward thinking, that's what we're looking for in leadership in each of our companies.
And what is the opposing argument to not having regulations? Like, what do you think it's like? What is the heart of this conversation, would you say?
So those that are opposing are very much embedded and attached to the fossil fuel economy. And so there's something to hide, right? The people that don't want to participate in being transparent about what the carbon is, and what their risk level is, and I think are the ones that have something to hide, both for the risk of their business model as well as the level of pollution that they are putting out there, because there's a lot of investors that don't want to invest in those companies that are having large carbon offsets.
Interesting. That's a really good point. And ESG, the term itself, you haven't mentioned it at once in this program at least, but it certainly sounds like that's very a very similar technique and process. Is there a reason you haven't used that term yet? Is it because it's a Stickman, kind of a Stickman term right now, or do you see your philosophy differentiating than ESG?
So ESG stands for environment, social, and governance. And It's a term that has become popular. Whether you like it or not is a whole nother thing. It's also become very, you know what? The dog is barking. I'm just gonna let the dog out. I'll be right
Take
back.
him out. Take him out. We love dogs on this program too. You can bring him back if you'd like to. And folks, just while Kristen's out there, ESG for everybody, if you're watching this show, you probably know what it is. But it's environmental social governance. And ideally, when the term was invented and coined and used, it was actually more to as a risk tolerance. It was a risk lens investors could see investments through to help predict financial performance for the future. Now it's become super polarized, as we were just talking about. But Christian, go ahead, as you've just rejoined us here on the program.
Yeah, happy to. So, environment, social, and governance for us as investors, that means we want transparency into what the company is doing. And just as I mentioned before, many of the index products, those are built, the S&P 500 as one example, those are US. So, the domicile, meaning where is the company set up, their headquarters is in the US. And then it's largely our largest 500 companies. So, choosing by size and by domicile means that we're not paying attention to the governance, to what the products or services are, to what the environmental or social implications or effects or impacts of the company are. So by using an ESG lens, which is largely what we do at NEA, is we're looking for companies that are having the highest positive impact and that are also reducing risk by not having a large environmental impact. That means that we are oftentimes reducing risk. And so the term has become quite controversial because there are some of us that want that transparency and want to invest in the very best companies. Those of the companies, those that are highly invested in some of the companies that are, as I mentioned, doing the large carbon production, you know, whether it's gas, oil, we call it natural gas, but lots of fracking. There's some risk to the environment, and then there's also some risk to the investments. And so many of the people that are in bed with the fossil fuel industry want to cover that up, and they don't want to have transparency about that. And so I think that's largely what's coming up there. Then there are some that are opposed to the S and the G, and that is, you know, don't look at our governance. We don't want you looking at our social policies. We don't want to think about how diversity plays out in our hiring or our recruiting or our promotions. And so please don't have any disclosures.
Right. Yeah. And it's that. It's also, I think, and just what I've been seeing out there, it's also, hey, you know, we can't, we kind of need all sources of energy. You know, it's not about me or you. It's about, hey, the most cars out there are powered by gasoline these days. It's not like we can flip a switch and just go straight to electric. There are still issues with that as well. You know, most of our commercial units are being transported by, you know, gas-powered vehicles, diesel-fueled engines. And that's how we've also helped build this economy as well. So just to kind of throw it away and say it's evil is not conducive to the inclusivity and the growth of the economy. So I think that that's also really important. But also from a non-climate perspective, I haven't really been hearing this as much, but gosh, there's so many multinational geopolitical issues with fossil fuels as well. I mean, control, wars, conflicts, leverage. I mean, wouldn't one think that going to a sustainable energy would be in the best interest of a domestic country such as America? I mean, has anyone talked about that as well?
It's certainly a topic of conversation among investors, and I'm guessing among global leaders as well, because lots of the geopolitical issues have us, have companies, have governments thinking about nearshoring, which is bringing things local. So that does help from an environmental perspective. And then it also helps from thinking about our energy sources. So if we are dependent on fossil fuels, that means there are the countries that produce those, you know, from the Middle East to Venezuela to the US. And then there's the transporting of that and via pipelines, via shipping, which can cause a lot of environmental hazards. And then also with geopolitical issues and relationships shifting and changing, there could be delays and there could be higher prices. And so concentrating on nearshoring by bringing renewable energy domestically can actually de-risk both the economy and then also each nation and their energy supply. So that's certainly of interest to investors as well as global leaders.
And that's a great answer. One of the things I'd love to ask you, I think you have like a really interesting like mindset for this is, I'll just give you a scenario. So 1% for the planet, great organization started by Yvon Chouinard, really helping out with a lot of land protection for the climate.
We are proud 1% members.
You are okay, fantastic. Well, Kate was just at our event last week, and one of the questions that I was just kind of throwing around in my head again, didn't talk to anyone about this was. If Exxon came to her and said, "Hey, I want to be 1% for the planet," would that be a good thing? And so I just posed that question to you. Like a company like a fossil fuel company, should they be looked down upon for donating 1% back to the planet?
So it's a really good question, and I've been on boards of directors of nonprofit companies that have received, or the question was whether we should receive some nonprofit dollars. And so this is a very similar question to the 1% for planet is a commitment that companies that join and are accepted to that will donate 1% of their profits to environmental organizations. And what we want to see, and this is our investment thesis, is that the products and services and the actual revenue coming to the company are based on environmentally sound practices. So I'm glad I'm not in Kate's position making that decision, because that would be really controversial, because those fossil fuel companies like Chevron have an enormous amount of profits and they have government subsidies. So the amount of profits are very, very large. So I would have a hard time saying no to a company of that size if they were going to donate that much. Could they or should they be responsible for some of this cleanup? Absolutely. And if it should happen through 1%, through those nonprofits, I don't have a problem with that.
And there's another kind of asset class that's growing, carbon markets. And there's, as I've been educated on it, different tiers. Like there's regulations, and let's just say the two tiers that I'm familiar with are regulations and then voluntary carbon credits and carbon offsets. Do you see like that as a solution as well? Fossil fuels are here to say, hey, you know what? We're going to offset all of our carbon emissions, plant 1 billion trees around the world, more trees than ever. Would that be a step in the right direction?
So planting trees is always good. We need to plant as many trees as possible. That is actually right. We also need to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. We need to stop burning gas. And so it's a both and. We do need to plant all of those trees, and yet we can't buy our way out of this crisis. We really actually need to shift what is our status quo economy, and we need to have an economy that is greener, cleaner, and then also more inclusive. And so, does that mean, as I mentioned earlier, bringing renewable energy more locally, doing less transporting? So, no. I guess the shorter the long of it is, fossil fuel companies can't just offset. That could be a start. We don't mind them planting trees, and yet they really do need to shift their core business model such that it is renewable energy.
But Mike, the question I have again, just for food for thought, it's a fun conversation. The CO2 emissions, Scope 1 through 3, is really what we're going for here, right? So if we've disclosed that transparency, that's the metric. And if I can balance the equation, carbon's, CO2 emitted, CO2 captured, wouldn't that be, like a nice in between?
If we were starting at a neutral, then that would be fine. Then that would, but we're not. We're starting in a danger zone where we need to actually reduce the level and of our planet and not have it continue to rise. And so at our current level, we're continuing to rise. So investing in the solutions to the climate crisis is what we're about at NEA.
Got it. Okay. And is this based on reducing the overall like temperature of the climate? The two to, I think the United Nations has set goals for 2030, now extending back to 2045. So is this based on that kind of agenda?
Partly it's based on that, and then partly it's based on how they call it dirty oil for a reason, because when the ships that are going across the ocean, most of them are actually ocean liners. And so if we were to stop transporting fossil fuels across the oceans, there would be, of course, fewer spills, but the ocean life would be much healthier. So in addition to reducing the temperature that we need to meet, that the scientists say we need to meet, it also is a cleaner, each one of these, particularly wind, is a much cleaner form of energy. And if you think about it, both wind and solar, those are completely renewable. So sun, for the most part, is here consistently, and wind blows consistently. And rather than a commodity, that where the price will fluctuate and there is a limited number, solar and wind are unlimited. And then the technologies to harness, whether it's solar panels or wind turbines, technologies get better over time. If you think about what we had with a phone or a computer 20 years ago, and now we have something that sits on our wrist, similar, the technologies always get better and they always get cheaper. And with the input being solar or wind remaining constant and free, that's something that an investor can really get behind.
Question for you. This, you mentioned, you know, technology with iPhones and then now going to our wrist. Does the speed of technology and innovation shrink with the reduction of fossil fuels? I mean, if we have sustainable cruise liners, charging batteries, it takes a long time to do that. Does the speed of which we innovate shrink?
No. Our innovation is speeding up. And what we need to do is do it in a really thoughtful way. We're seeing this with AI. The innovation is almost existential, and yet, can we harness it and be really productive and really conscious about the ways that we're using the tech and the innovation?
I really like that. Gosh, this is a fascinating conversation today. I just appreciate you being open to answering these questions, Kristen. It's just been really enlightening to learn, and I think our audience has really enjoyed the discussion here today as well. In all of this, what is the leadership needed to you to really drive this needle in the right direction?
So we do need real leaders right now, as you know, as your company celebrates the real leaders. And so those that are willing to go against the status quo, those that are willing to stand up for something that is right, knowing that it's empowering the people that they are leading, you know, so being really open to listening to what is needed, both for our planet, but then also for our people, because you're a leader if you have people following you and helping to implement your ideas, right? And so we need to be listening to our younger generation and be implementing. We are creating an economy for them. You know, we need it to work for everybody and for our investors with that right and responsibility about using their voice. Leaders need to be listening to them as well. So looking beyond the status quo and then looking to what is beneficial for the whole, because once we're thinking about what's best for the community, that's where some of our best innovation can really rise to the top.
Well said. For Kristen Hull, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, stand for something greater than yourself, and always keep it real. Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks, Kevin, and thanks for having me today.
Hey, ReLeaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to ReLeaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.